interview of this cycle. Appreciate your batting cleanup. Les Bench. Mr. Bench, I'm going to turn it over to you. We talked a little bit about the process. I'll turn it over to you for your opening thoughts. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A little introduction. I've been through kind of the whole system of the university system from the original ag school at Morris. I graduated from the ag school before it was turned into the university. And I guess my initial leadership started at the ag school in my senior year. I was the captain of the basketball team, captain of the football team, and I learned early on that leadership is not about yourself, it's about how well you make the other team perform, the rest of the team. I want to briefly touch on a few things. After I was born and raised on a small farm by Wendell, Minnesota, that's south of Fergus Falls, about 20 miles. We had about 220 acres. It was a medium-sized farm then. Now it's a very small farm compared to the acreages. When I got out of high school, I went into the Air Force. My parents said I could go to any college I wanted to as long as I paid my own way, and the option was, let's go in the military. I got my first training in electronics in the military. Worked at on the B-52s, KC-135s, and instrumentation and electronics. Ellsworth Air Force Base was my first assignment. From there, I went to Washington, D.C. in a special squadron, a nightwatch squadron, the president's plane, the chief of staff, and it was a flying command post. It was one of those spook squadrons where nobody knew anything about it. We didn't even know anything about it. We had to read about it in the newspaper. From when I got out of the Air Force after about 3 years, I was going to make a career of it. I decided that the bureaucracy was a little bit overwhelming and the creativity was a little bit stifling. I went to tech school in Minneapolis, Northwestern School of Electronics. I graduated from Brown Institute with a degree. And then my first assignment was Control Data. Control Data was an interesting company at the time. I'm sure all of you remember it. It's kind of a imagination now, a shell of a corporation, totally into different areas. But we were in the supercomputer market. I spent a lot of time in training at Control Data. I was on the upper and lower 3000 line. My first assignment was down in Houston, Texas. I wasn't crazy about going to Houston, but what the heck, I decided to take it. And my first assignment down there was a Houston Data Center and NASA Houston. I want to tell you about one little incident that I worked on down there during the time of the spaceflight program. We were working on all of the spaceflight programs that were taking place then, and one of the interestingest ones was the Saturn program. The Saturn program, the second flight of the Saturn rocket, it blew up as it reached the max skew position in orbit, and nobody knew much what could happen or what happened to it. They couldn't recover much of the damages, so they set up a test station at Wiley Laboratories in Huntsville, Alabama. I spent about 4 months there, and they set the Saturn rocket up in two in an eight-story building on a great big shaker table with airbags and heater strips to simulate that point of max skew of the heat, the vibration, so forth. We had a Control Data 3300, 65K of memory, that we had 200 analog to data sensors on it. 32 gig. But we had very rudimentary tools. We were going to sense all the data. They were going to shake it, bend it, heat it, and sense the data coming off that rocket. I worked with two computer scientists. They were a couple of crazy guys. We worked 20 hours a day. We loved the job. We had to write the program in machine language because the memory wasn't big enough to support an operating system. Got to the point where they were ready to run the test. I headed back to Houston because there wasn't a thing I could do anyway. So they ran the test the first time, they ran the test the second time, and they could find no failure, so the program took off. And as we look at past history, the Saturn program was the carrier for the Apollo missions. And the Apollo missions were the circular of the moon and landing on the moon. It was fabulous type, interesting work. We would work our 20 hours and couldn't wait to get back in there after a couple hours of sleep. They kind of burnt me out, and I was in the tech support position at Control Data. And I put on over 1 million miles traveling, wore out 3 sets of lifetime luggage, and I kind of got burnt out a little bit. So I kind of worked my way back to Minneapolis after a while, went into product marketing. I didn't particularly care for the job. I was the technical support of marketing, and I wasn't kind of used to that. I wanted to get my hands on the hardware. So as a result, I was a little bored, so the GI Bill just came back into effect, and I went to the University of Minnesota. I carried 12 credits for 4 years in applied studies. I didn't have time to do it conventionally, so I had to do it a little bit differently. Went into my first management job then at Control Data, back in the technical field. And then I took a job with Network Systems Corporation, located in North Minneapolis at the time, 7600 Boone Avenue. It was a fun company. I was the first person in there in the technical field, the support area. My position was National Field Service Manager. We developed the hardware, the software, the protocol, the pieces of that would make the internet applicable. We didn't build the internet, as Al Gore said, but we did build the pieces that the internet could be built and operated from. Had a great time with Network Systems. I spent 5 years. Then I took a leap into the venture capital world, and I joined a company as one of the venture capitalists, Digigraphic Systems. We worked 3 years, accomplished nothing, and it failed. Poor management team. I was part of that management team, and you'll learn a lot from your failures. You'll learn a very extent from your failures. I was unemployed for the first time in my life, and I started up M&E Cable. We cabled a 600 square mile area up in the Fergus Falls area, that secondary market. We sold it. I saw the satellite technology coming into being, and we sold it to the local telephone company. And again, I was unemployed. I probably should have retired then, but retirement is for old guys. It wasn't in my agenda. As an owner of Viking Valley Hunt Club, I always owned that. We bought the business, or we bought the land back in 1975, so it was a parallel business. We liked the land. We organized and we built a hunt club, but the hunt club is a little bit different. Our main emphasis is youth activities and just doing things for the community. The youth activities and conservation is the main thing. We had one interesting element. We hosted the Russian trade delegation in the 80s. We had all the heads of state for the Russia staying at the lodge, and had a very interesting meeting with him. A month later, all the worker bees came in. They could speak English, and I would happen to be in the pub in Ashby that evening having a beer, and they came in a drove. They flew into New York City, into Minneapolis, a bus, and the first time they set foot on private soil was at my hunt club. And they came in about 9 o'clock, and I didn't get out of there till about 5 o'clock in the morning. I had a captive audience of about 25 people, and they talked about the democracy and what Gorbachev was trying to do. I think from our inputs, we had an effect. We had an influence. Gorbachev wasn't totally successful, but he started a new trend. Okay, getting into some of my associations, I'm closely associated with the University of Minnesota Morris. I was on Jackie Johnson's Chancellor Advisory Committee. I was on the UM Capital Campaign, the one before the one that's going on now, a member of the President's Club. We helped establish the Rural Scholarship Fund with some of my donations to primarily go to the rural areas as far as scholarships. I donated land along with my partner, Eric Torgerson, who is one of my references. We donated the land to form an eco center. I saw Morris going away from what I thought was a healthy climate of having the roots based in agriculture, and we decided to start the eco center. It's kind of a dream of mine. It hasn't done well right now, but hopefully it'll reestablish itself. My position is a senior fellow of sustainability. I've written the syllabuses for polycultures, permacultures, environmental sustainability and agricultural research, and root cause problem solving. The agricultural movement is going through a major evolution right now. And one of the things that I would like to do is see that the University of Minnesota Crookston would go more into the sustainable agriculture. I've got a meeting coming up in 2 weeks. It's the Northern Plains Sustainable Agriculture Function tremendous organization. The old corn-soybean rotation is failing. It will not succeed in the future. We have to look at the soil health as a major problem, and we have to address that. And this is what we're looking at in the sustainable agriculture. The non-GMOs, primarily hybrids, looking at the low inputs, strip tillage, cover crops, things like that. They're making a lot of great successes in that. I also belong, our association, the Minnesota Game Breeders Shooting Preserve Association. I was past president, and now I'm kind of the permanent vice president. They have me go down to the Capitol when we have some political problems, and we have very few except the Department of Revenue. They want to charge us tax. They're in violation of statutory law. We are going to address that this session and solve that problem. They try to charge us sales tax on a pheasant, which is a food product. I do not consider myself a lobbyist. I do it at no compensation, but I do it just to solve problems. One of the other ones that I'm very proud of is the Legacy Amendment. I think you're all familiar with the Legacy Amendment that was passed in 2008. I worked with Senator Bob Lessard for 8 years. I was in the field. I was just one of the worker bees working in the field. But in 2008, when those guys went to deer camp, we're kind of setting our strategy for the next year, and by golly, it passed. It passed by a margin of about 57%, and all the no votes or all the blank votes were considered no votes, so it was actually realistically about 65%. Then we decided, well, what are we going to do? I sat on the first conference committee to set the rules and that we would abide by. We formed the Lessard Outdoor Heritage Council, Lessard Sam's Outdoor Heritage Council. I sat on the council for the first 4 years, and we tried to keep it on track. A lot of the legislatures were not in approved of a dedicated fund, a dedicated spending. We've kind of made sure that stayed with the constitutional amendment. And the basic aspects of the amendment are preservation, protection, and restoration of the environment. And to date, we've donated through the sales tax over $1 billion. We stay very closely intact with the council in case there's any attacks on that particular function and keep it in line. I'm going to touch on my closing statement, and then I'll turn it over to questions. Why am I interested in the Board of Regents? I believe the Board of Regents, their basic policy is enforcing the 19 policies that exist in the regions. But I think it goes deeper than that. I've got some ideas for Duluth, Crookston, Rochester, Minneapolis, which I'd be very happy to discuss with you. Some very significant problems that exist in the industry. And one of the main things that I would like to see, if you look at the top 17 Fortune 500 companies in Minnesota, every one of them and every viable company in the state needs employees. We're short of employees. I would like to see, we talk about the tuition, the high cost of tuition. When I got out of school, I had zero debt because I worked. I would like to see us establish a very robust internship program with all the companies in the state of Minnesota. I'll hire them. Let those young people come out of their freshman, sophomore years, go to work for a company and find out what are the tools that they need. We can help them decide what additional courses they need, how they can channel their inputs and so forth. So this is one of the main things. If I didn't believe that we can make a significant change and improvement to the university system, I wouldn't be here. People say, well, why aren't you retiring? It's just not in my DNA, I guess. I think this is a challenge, and I am prepared to offer the next 6 years of my life in dedication to seeing if we can make the system better. Now, I'll turn it over to you for questions.
Thank you. I will. I'll start. The University of Minnesota is our state's land-grant university. What does that mean to you, and what do you think it should mean to the people of Minnesota?
Well,
Oh, He's next in line.
As a land-grant university, we have certain responsibilities. And if I could relate back to Morris, the Native American population goes to Morris at no tuition cost. Now, I see a very big discrepancy there in the sense that we're missing an opportunity and we're unjustly treating the University of Minnesota Morris in the sense that we're not funding it properly. I think we should be looking. I had many conversations with Jackie, the last chancellor, and I said, why don't we do something? She said, well, a bill is in the federal level and there's another school down in southern United States that's going, and I said, Jackie, by the time that bill gets up to appropriation, you and I won't be around any longer. So I would like to see us take to the university, take to the legislature a funding proposal to withstand or to fulfill that obligation of a land-grant university and take advantage of going to the Native American societies, tribes, and help them out and see if we can address a serious problem that the tribal that exists in the tribes. And I think we could probably get some of the institutions, the Native American institutions, to fund some of this. But I think we need to solely reckon that the land-grant college is a major building block in the state of Minnesota. It's one of the most important ones in the state. And I guess other than that, the one specific example, I hope I've answered your question.
Councilmember Menon.
Thank you. Sorry about that confusion. My question relates to crisis management. Obviously, the University of Minnesota has faced a myriad of crises over the last few years. What do you believe are the core functions and aspects of crisis management, and how would you bring that thinking to a collaborative effort, which is how the Board of Regents manages itself?
One of the courses that I teach is root cause problem analysis and solution. And I guess I developed this in my technical background of solving problems. And I use the same technique in solving problems. First of all, you create a team, an effective team with diverse ideas, diverse thoughts, and you bring them together and you start narrowing it down in the simplest common denominators and solve each one of those problems. I think one of the major problems that's talked about in the university system is the high cost of tuition. I would like to not only do a cursory overview of the budgets associated with each individual campus, but I'd like to get down into the core of those and find out things like, what is our ratio of administration to professors? I think we're a little bit overloaded on some of the administrative positions. What is our ratio of professors to the term is associate professor, that's not the term, but associate professor and student teachers. I think those are important things to look at as far as a balance of the working relationship with the university and the internal structure of the relationship working within the university. I do not think tuition is necessarily, it's a symptom of the problems. And I think we have to look at it as a symptom of the problem. And I'd like to see if we could alleviate some of this by the internship programs where we will pay the tuition of those students. I think we have to look at some of the basic elements that I was born and raised on, the work ethic. If you go to school, you're going to have to work too. It's not a free ride. And to take the credit card and run up the debt, there's more to it than that. So I think by installing a little bit more of a work ethic into the students to help them, and I'm sure we're going to have a lot of them that would like to do this, but I think we're going to have to work collaboratively with the industries and the businesses in Minnesota to make that happen. Did I answer your question, Theo?
I actually just have a brief follow-up.
Sure.
On the issue of crisis management, I was wondering if we can get a little bit more of your view on more specifically risk management. So that's in terms of perception in terms of a communications breakdown where there might be problems in perception of the university because of how, you know, lack of skill in handling a situation before it, you know, spirals out of control.
Well, I think the Board of Regents position has to lead the effort and assemble the expertise in the team. And then again, breaking those problems down to the smallest common denominator you can and addressing each one of those problems, I think really is the heart of it. And creating that team that you have the capability expressing your mind openly and honestly without the hostility that we see in our in our political circles today. I'm basically very sick and tired of it. I'd like to bang your heads together and say, come on, guys, sit down and talk about this thing.
Thank you.
Senator Anderson.
That's surprising. Mr. Burris, I'm sorry for walking in late. It's been a crazy week here. Thank you for your work with Trapper Bob on the Legacy Amendment. To that, you've been around the legislature quite a bit. What do you see as the role and responsibilities between the legislature and the University of Minnesota? And then I've got a separate follow-up.
When working with the legislators, I've learned to become politically blind. I don't ask, and I don't even know a lot of the party designations. And I think the university, and I would continue that same philosophy. I've been through something like 75 committee hearings. I took a bill through early in the game, way back in 2002. I spent 6 years at it, and the first 3 years I was extremely frustrated. I didn't understand the process. And the process is extreme scrutiny, and it should have extreme scrutiny, and that's you guys' job to scrutinize every aspect of everything that comes through. And I think if we have a proper team and a proper working relationship with the legislature, we can do that. I don't care if you're Democrat or Republican. I think if we sit down and figure out what the basic problem is and then figure out how to solve it and put our heads together and work together to solve that for the good of the people and the good of the students and the good of the university.
And just so a follow-up on that, what do you think the role for the legislature is in towards the U? What's our responsibility in relationship?
I would say extreme scrutiny of what they're doing. Make them prove that the steps that they're taking are the proper steps. Make sure that you are looking at the innovation. Make sure we're looking at are we in a 2000... Are we in a 20th century role, or are we in a 21st century model? And sometimes we have to look at upgrading our ideas and our principles to adapt to that. When I was going through through the university, the course book was a big book. How many of those courses are viable today? I think we should be looking at those and saying, maybe we have to look at the core responsibility that we're trying to create, and maybe there's some obsolescence in the curriculum, and continue to review that curriculum to make sure that we're viable for the challenges that those kids have entering into society and the business workforce.
Right. One more, Mr. Chair.
Sure.
You had mentioned in your opening statement about workforce shortage and how students can best prepare. I just want to maybe revisit that for a second. I thought did you mention that the students should go out and learn what path they should be on before going to the university, or just
no? I think during it. I think that summer period and even in the during the school year. I think a lot of these, and it depends. Logistically, it has to fit. They're not going to travel 100 miles for a job in the school year, but I think the companies that are out there would be more than happy to look at the students if there's an interest there, guide them a little bit as to say, well, gee, improve your computer sciences, your business majors, whatever that aspect may be, to guide that student and get a close working relationship between the business, the university, and let those students know what's available out there. I've talked to every industry, every industry I've talked to is so open to the idea. But sometimes I found that the doors to that university are not always that open.
Thank you.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I thank you for your interest in the candidacy, especially coming from outside of the Twin Cities. I'm currently I live in Moorhead. And so I want to commend you on your prairie restoration project. Even though my beet farmer friends don't really like that. I want to ask you, I'm a graduate of medical school. I want to ask you questions specifically about that, but it includes other professional schools at the university. Medical school provides about 80% of the practicing physicians in this state. The health sciences are a significant portion of the $4 billion budget. The rankings of our medical school, especially, has gone down over the last couple of decades, where we were consistently ranked in the top 10 in the country. Now we're talking about numbers that are, 30-something at least. And we can argue about who's ranking and the validity of those. However, do you have an opinion or any thoughts you'd have about improving those rankings, or what does that matter or mean to the university?
Some years back, I believe the university lost its contract with Fairview Hospitals as far as working together with hospitals, and I think that resident hospital, Rochester, whichever one we choose in the Minneapolis area, has to be a very close working partnership. To try to get a medical school that's going to rank high, I think we have to have that close association with the existing hospitals, or create that partnership with the existing hospitals to allow that to happen. Does that make sense?
As you're aware, they do have a new agreement just recently.
We'll
see what happens with that.
And a comment on the beef farmers. There's a very good way of winning both battles on that one. And the strip tillage and the cover crops is a one.
You'd have an answer. Good job.
Council members, additional questions?
I'll go one more.
Councilmember Brady.
Thank you. Your opening remarks resonated with me. I'm a parent of four, and I think every parent that sends a child off to those higher education institutions is really excited about them getting that knowledge. But in my case, I also was very excited about them being fully employed and becoming economically mature. What also resonated with me was through the University of Minnesota in 1977, I did an internship at NASA down in Houston, and had the pleasure of walking through what might have been a different data center at that time, which was about three football fields with dispacks gathering the initial Landsat information to do the mapping of the whole U.S. And the world, and do crop projections and a lot of other things, probably for the CIA. One of the things that was very interesting when I was there, we've talked a lot about revenue and revenue alternatives. NASA had a magazine called Spinoff, and I submit that the very phone you held up at the beginning of the presentation really is evolution of some of the work that was done with that space shot that Kennedy asked for. And you talk a little bit, if you have any thoughts, about the university partnering and creating intellectual capital, patents, and things of that nature. Have you done any thinking about that as a revenue source?
Absolutely. One of the areas, it's a little bit off the technical end of it, but if you're all familiar with the mining controversy we have up in northwestern Minnesota, we have a major, major potential problem coming up, and there's a solution to that problem that I don't think we'd explore. I would like to see the University of Minnesota Duluth create a mining wing, a mining course, not a course, much more bigger than that, something that's funded by the mining companies and solve the problem through the technical work that we can do on it, and the mining companies put our heads together and form that partnership. Twin Metals is a conglomerate of some world organizations that do not have a good environmental track record, and I would like to see us go after that sulfate mining problem that could be disastrous to the watersheds of the north and all of Lake Superior. And we passed the initial permits, but I think if we put our heads together with those mining companies and solve the technical problems, they're trying to figure out right now how to prevent the sulfate or the sulfuric acid from being released. I don't think that's the problem. I think we have to look at containment, neutralization, and containment after the process has been done. Lime and cement, create a building block, create a monstrous solid unit, but with what we're doing now and what we're posing, those slush beds, or those sludge beds have to be maintained for 500 years to be non-viable as a pollutant source anymore. That's impossible for us to do. Number one, they do not have the finances to do that. So that's one example, I think, of partnering. The engineering, the sciences, I think, any company that is involved in that, any computer company, any software company, I think they would be wise to partner with the University of Minnesota and any other university. The partnership of industry, I don't see as happening. And I've challenged President Kaler on this, and he kind of scratched his head the first time, and then I made him answer it the second time. So I think the partnership is the big key to this, and the results effect. And by the way, once we establish that mining wing at the University of Minnesota Duluth, the state of Minnesota and the university holds the patents, because we can solve that problem. Through the sale of those additional patents, we will be totally financially sustainable in that operation.
Councilmember Moore.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Candidate Bench, for being here and for your interest. Minnesota is one of the worst states in terms of racial equity. So in your opinion, what's the role of the university in creating a more equitable landscape for students and just the constituencies within the state of Minnesota?
That's a good question. I don't have all the answers for it, but I think it's a matter of inclusion and keeping the diversity in the jobs, the businesses, the classes, the professors. I think it's a constant process from A to Z that we have to keep the inclusion. It's not any one thing that's going to happen, but it's a matter of you and I talking, you and I have a meeting of the minds. When we have differences that create the racial tensions, sit down and work them out. And we're not doing that in so many cases. We create the dissension. We create the negatives of all sorts. But I think the main thing is let's get back to sitting down as people and talking it out and coming up with a problem and agreeing that I don't necessarily have to agree with you, but we have to recognize and respect each other's opinion. I think that's going to be the big step. And boy, we're a long way from that right now.
Councilmember Carlson.
Inclusion and diversity, constant A to Z. So when we think about that, the Board of Regents today, if you don't take the people who are up for re-election, there are 8 men and 1 person of color. And no women. And so what this group is struggling with on the A to Z is that we have some very strong female candidates. So two-part question to you. What advice would you give us when we struggle with that? And then the second, if you were not selected as a regent, how could you continue to share your intellectual and philanthropic capital with the university? I know you are, but could you answer the first part?
Right. In my business experiences, I've always had women that have played a very important part. My wife is in my many years of marriage, I won't say how long, but it's been many, I have never come up with an idea in my marriage that she has agreed to. Never. We have to go through the discussion. And by the time that I convince her that I'm right, we've covered a lot of ground and we've modified our positions. And I would say, keep going after it. Keep going, keep trying, keep edging into it. After this meeting, I'm going over to the DNR roundtable. We have our first lady commissioner, Sarah Strohm. She's the commissioner of the DNR. Now, that is a tough position. It's politically, it's tough. But Sarah, I've worked with Sarah for the last 10 years. She's a tremendous lady, and she will do a good job at it. And I'm going to go up and tell her and meet her again that I'm going to be her biggest critic, but I'm also going to be her biggest supporter, and I will not let her fail. So It's a matter of that stubborn contestation that you just got to keep at it. And it's going to take time. And I think women have made a tremendous progress in the last 10 years, the last 15 years. And there's more progress to be made. And like I said, I've always had strong ladies on my staff that I've worked with. And it's just a matter of breaking down some of those old traditional barriers that exist. And it's not an easy task to do that.
Follow up. What if it affects your candidacy? That's really the essence of my question.
Oh, it will, because I am right now a minority. I'm white, I'm old, older, and that puts me in the minority right now, so that necessarily probably is going to put a couple strikes against me. So for myself personally, yes, it will affect, and I realize that. And I just have to work a lot harder to prove differently. I know many of you will question my age, and I promise that I will not use my age and experience against your youth and inexperience.
Being 75, thank you very much.
Councilmember Rogers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the issues that comes up frequently is the tuition levels charged to students at the university. And as you're aware, the university has a budget of $4 billion to balance. And they're not going to balance this budget based on continual increase of tuition. What other ideas do you have as far as resources and budget balancing for the Board of Regents?
Well, rather than doing a cursory view of the budget, that $4 billion budget, I think we have to drill down. We have to really look at the basics of all of that budget and find out, are we doing things that just because we're doing things? I read a statistic the other day that said that of all the research documents that the university puts out, less than 1% of them, it's one review. Now, how much money are we spending on research that, unless you're going to do research that you've got an idea, you've got a problem, and you've got a certain direction that you're going in that, are we just spinning our wheels? I call it the fly-speck pepper theory of research, where you separate the fly specks from the pepper, and when you get done, you got two piles, they taste about the same, and what have you accomplished? You know, it's a simplistic way of putting it, but I think we have to look at all aspects, and I think to balance that budget, we have to really get down there and look at where the money is being spent and how it's being spent, and then can we improve that? Can we improve the efficiency of that? So the tuition is one of the problems, but I think it's breaking all the problems down to that root cause problem analysis and solution. And I think we have to really drill down and find out to that bottom level. There's expenditures in the university that I don't think are necessary. There's a lot of controversy, but again, it's bring the people together with it of the diverse opinions and kick around the ideas and come up with a solution. I don't know if I've answered your question, Jerry.
Thank you.
Council members, additional questions? Going once. All right, I think we've exhausted our questions, sir.
My goodness.
We'll turn it back to you for closing comments, although I think you referenced your closing comments in your opening.
And a little bit on that. To summarize, I think the business, working together with the businesses in the state of Minnesota and outside of the state of Minnesota, we're right on the North Dakota border. And North Dakota is a vibrant economy with the oil and the agricultural and everything going on. I think working with them together, looking at the sports programs. Yes, sports are very, very important in the university system, but is that the primary objective? Is that the primary objective? And I think we always all have to look at what is the primary objective and what are we trying to accomplish? And I feel that is providing that young person that's going through that educational institution the proper tools that that person can go out and face the industry challenges and the survival out there. It's a survival world out there, and one of the things that I teach in our environmental courses is paleo survival. How do you grow your own food? How many people? We could grow most of our own food right here in Minneapolis, in St. Paul, if we just plowed up a lot of those lawns and created some greenhouses and created some new ideas that we don't have to ship a tomato from California. We can grow it right here with our technology. We're working on an experimentation right now with a solar greenhouse with the full spectrum LEDs where we store the light in the batteries, the deep cycle batteries. We reuse that in the nighttime operations to power the LEDs to see, does a plant need or can a plant withstand 24-hour growing period? We don't know. I think it's a great experiment that just begs to be explored. Cruxton aligning more with the sustainable agriculture. Rochester creating that strong partnership with the Mayo Clinic. I haven't had to go down to the Mayo Clinic. Hopefully I don't have to go down to the Mayo Clinic other than looking to see what they're doing and see if we can trigger some new ideas and some new cooperation and some new partnerships. The Minneapolis campus, again, it's the central campus with the 60,000 students that has the most opportune time to get into the internship program. I work very closely with the CFANs. Professor Theodorson, I'm thinking of his first name. Professor Theodorson. He's the one that's in the Aquatic Invasives Research Institute. And he was having a heck of a time getting any funding, having a research facility to use. About 10 years ago, well, it's probably about 9 years ago now, Senator Bill Ingerbison and I took the approach of just interviewing Peterson and saying, what do you need? And we had about a four-hour meeting and we came out with some ideas. Bill took this through the Senate, we got the funding available, and now we have the Aquatic Invasives Research Institute, which is a great addition. The Veterinarian Sciences, tremendous facility. I worked with Dr. Wiersbo. We had Bob Bruning sat to my facility a couple of years ago, and we had a problem in the field, hunting dogs. It was called the ingested on. Canadian wild rice is part of the wild rice or wild prairie that exists in the seed pod on the Canadian wild rice is a fluffy seed pod with a lot of barbs on it. What is happening is it was primarily the flusher dogs. They're running through the fields. The seeds break off. They ingest them, go in their lung or into their intestine, and the wild rye would create an infection. The chemicals in the wild rye stimulated that. And it would fester, and it would cause big pockets of festering infection. And the veterinarians would give them a couple weeks of antibiotics, and everything would settle down. Well, I had one dog, my beautiful dog, Sheba. By the way, the dogs are a big part of my life. I'm writing my final book. It's going to be called my autobiography, and it's going to be around the dogs of my life. But I'm going to cover some of the technical things that we've been through. Well, anyway, we researched this, and I took her down to the University Hospital. Dr. Rose was one of the attending physicians. He's a brilliant individual. They determined what it was, and he said they had to remove a portion of her lung. And he was saying, kind of, do you want to do this? And I said, yeah, let's give it a shot. Once we did that, we determined what the problem was in detail. We determined what the solution was. And the solution was not to give them an antibiotic for 2 weeks. It was putting them on about a four-month antibiotic. So Dr. Wiersbo was the head doctor at the time down there that was running the operation. And I suggested we get this information out to the world, at least the United States. This is a billion-dollar. Hunting dogs are big money, a big business. Wiersbo didn't get it done. So when Bob came up and we had the final discussions over a glass of wine, I showed him the document. I showed him the letter to Dr. Wiersbo. Bob went back, and within the next week, the letter was written to cover the United States to number one, find, you know, teach the solution to solving the problem. Then we went to the native prairie seed growers, and we said, get the Canadian wild rice out of your mixture. Easy to do. So we went to the source, solved that, and went to the solution, solved that. And my Sheila lived another several years, and she's up on top of my hill in my meditation garden. And, you know, other than that, you know, I've lived a happy life. I asked the question, is there anything in your background? I was a little wild in my youth, but I got through it. I was able to get a top secret security clearance with a background investigation, so the government couldn't find anything wrong. So I'm enthused about taking on the challenge, hopefully for your considerations. Hopefully my minority status will not be a problem. And I'm looking forward to it. So thank you.
Well, thank you very much for your interest. Thank you for your time.